All right. Well, welcome. Hi.
Hello.
That was
Hey,
exciting to watch the feature film. Feature film? Concert film? What are we calling
yes.
it?
Well, what is
Artistic expression?
it's a film that features concerts.
What is the definition of a feature film? Does that just mean
It's
that it
all the
features
length.
anybody?
The
Yeah.
length.
The
And
length.
this is the
It's
length of
long
a
enough.
feature
I think
film.
it's the
It is.
length.
There's also
I
a
think it meets
narrative
the criteria.
storyline throughout. Right? We're
Yeah.
sort of.
Loosely.
Yeah, it's loose. Yeah, it's
We're
sort of abstract, but yeah.
sure. Well, Amperland is I guess no longer a part of your lives, right?
Sadly, no. No, we've all gone our separate ways. Yeah.
So I have just to start, welcome to Evan and Zach.
Thank
This
you.
is
Thank
like
you. Thanks for
kind
keeping me
of.
busy. Yeah.
Welcome to me.
Thank you.
I really loved this concert film, feature film movie. And I guess I have several questions, and then we have questions from fans. We have lots of questions. We want to get through as many as we can until it feels like it's boring and we have to say good night. So I guess my first one is, what was the impetus behind doing this? What was the drive? Where'd the idea come from?
Well,
Yeah.
I think in a way it started with the reaction to the audio tree sessions. You know, just we again and again we've met people who say, you know, that was the thing that introduced me to the band. And we've always loved doing the live sessions and kind of rearranging the songs for different occasions. And we loved the way it sounded in the room in Amperland, and when we knew that that our lease was going to be up, we figured it'd be awesome to revisit a bunch of songs. And so it started with the music, and then it started to spider out into all these other categories, like how could we make it look cool? How could we, you know, how far can we push it? And so the story element was added a little bit later on in the conception of it.
Well, I guess partially what I was wondering is because I do feel like since you've done so many releases of your music in various different ways with different arrangements of musicians with the two of you, that it has always kind of like those your music has always sort of seemed to me a bit like a lot of the songs are sort of like in process as we're getting to listen to them and enjoy
Yeah.
them. And so I was wondering about the building the playlist for this movie slash now album. Were you looking at songs that you maybe hadn't done live, hadn't recorded live with this group of people? Was that part of the decision?
Yeah.
You're like, oh.
That was part of no, that was part of it. Zach will definitely have an opinion about this too, but like, you know, playing with different musicians has always we've always when somebody new is coming into the fold or it's someone who we've played with before, but we haven't for a while, we always try to play to the strengths of the people who are involved as opposed to trying to recreate any ideal version of the song. And so even when we're recording it for you know, a studio album release, it's just always one iteration of the song. But a lot of it has to do with keeping us entertained too, I think.
Right, but do you feel like there's like a definitive version of any one of the songs?
Well, no, I don't. I think that they're all you know, in the process of being written, sort of, and being improved as much as we can.
And I think one thing that we were trying to keep in mind when we were coming up with the songs to do on this, and just like trying not to do anything the exact same way that it's been done before by us with this crew, whether it was on a record or on a live session in studio type thing. You know, that's why, like, there's no Cardinal songs on this.
That's why I was going to say that. I noticed.
Right. As I'm sure most people have.
And
We did so many of those in, like, Tiny Desk, Audio Tree, various in studio things that we did, that we wanted to give some other songs a little bit more love, especially ones that we tried to not do any of the Marigold songs the exact same way. I mean, I think maybe a couple of them were, but, like, during the rehearsal process for this, we were making an attempt to, you know, like, I think The Alarmist is swung instead of straight, and and this one, like, there are subtle things like that. And just to answer that question, maybe the previous one too, like, one thing that I'm sure if anyone's ever done this, they know. And maybe
so many people, it's like very common for
right, exactly, to do a feature-length movie. No, but but particularly like the Audio Tree things or the in studios, you know, those are usually done on tour, like in the morning or the early afternoon when you have a show that night,
because
that's a slotted into, like, okay, well, this is filmed in Chicago, so
it's promo.
Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so fast. You know, you show up, you have to set up, get the sounds, record, boom, and you have to be out in time for sound check. Like, we did this the palette sessions in Chicago. It was like we had time to do like one or two takes of every song, and I'm thrilled with how that turned out, and the people that did it were amazing. But, like, part of the impetus for this was, man, it would be cool to have that type of thing, but really have as much time as we need or as much time as we desire to really kind of craft the set and the set list and rehearse specifically for this, and not just, like, have it be something that we do while we're on tour. So
right,
this
and I guess
new focus. Yeah.
We all had the fucking time.
Yeah, well, wildly, this was recorded.
You did not do this pre-pandemic.
We did. It was
my
recorded.
God, you guys, are you kidding?
I know.
Believe it or not.
I was waiting for the story where you're like, well, we have had the big tour, obviously, and this was our pivot.
No.
Oh, okay. When did you guys do this?
November of 2019. Right. Yeah, but at a certain point, we started to realize, maybe for somebody who hasn't seen us perform before, this would be a cool, you know, for anybody in Hawaii or Wyoming or West Virginia, the three states that we haven't performed in, that this is for you, or Argentina or Bolivia, or, you know, all of the other countries that we've not performed in.
Right.
But then it's for everybody, you know.
That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so now it's for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it is
Bolivia.
I would have to say, just like in and of itself, I feel like Marigold, I don't know, clearly was not written for the pandemic. And, you know, the entire album feels incredibly relatable to the paradigm shift that we all have experienced in the last 9 or 10 months. And that's part of the reason why it became, I think, like, for me personally, an album that I returned to again and again during, like, the first lockdown and then throughout the pandemic. And I do think at this moment, especially, like, when we're all missing live music so much, the timing couldn't have been better for this. So I am really surprised to find out that this was pre-pandemic vibes. So you guys willingly locked yourselves into a house together for the pre-pandemic to do this shoot. How long did you guys rehearse?
Oh, I don't remember. Zach, do you?
I do remember. So we came up with the schedule of this project. It was November, like, first to whenever Thanksgiving happened. So it was basically 3 weeks. 1 week of, like, building the set, 1 week of rehearsing, and then 1 week of recording. So we rehearsed for a full week prior to the week of recording. And the recording schedule, because it was, I mean, we even did more songs that didn't make the cut. So I forget, but it was like 25 songs or something like that we recorded, something around there. So it was kind of, I think, a more intense daily schedule than even we realized it was going to be. You know, we were in there doing good, like, 10, plus hour days, I think.
Yeah, filming is hard, Zach.
Right.
It's really hard.
Yeah. I'm used to just like hour and a half on stage, concert over.
Right. Work day.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I have much respect for you people doing the film thing on set. Those are long days.
I mean, it is, and it's also super fun, and you're with people that you like, hopefully, and you know, it's like you're making art and putting something into the world. So it's all, but yeah, sometimes it's fucking hard. Well, I'm curious, were any of them one a single shot? Because a couple of them felt like it was like we were having a Scorsese moment, and that it was like a single take.
Yeah, yeah, a few of them, though. So all of the all of the songs, even when it's edited between it, uh-huh. it's all from a single take of that song. So we would just choose.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So from our perspective, it wasn't really different when they wanted to do the single take swivel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But those shots did come out pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And like in terms of art direction, who was sort of leading the charge? Guys, I at home, I really tried. I just want you to all
agree. Yes.
Look at that coordination.
Which, by the way, when we signed on to the Zoom, they had no fucking idea what I was like, guys, it's the movie. I'm doing the movie. It's the
it was like we made this last November.
Yeah. Well, guys, yeah, in my head you were doing it in May. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Right.
I had no idea.
This was the sweater of my blue.
Oh, true.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. So art direction. So talk to me about who.
Yeah. Well, I guess that would have been me. And the first thought was to paint the walls, but that just ended up not really being a good idea. And anyway, I'm glad because the thing that we ended up with was stranger and more textural, and I don't know. So it's all thumbtacked fabric.
Right. Well, I didn't, I should have used thumbtacks. I used a hanger. I used two hangers and some of those command hooks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. That's what I did.
We had a hard time.
I will say that we happened to, so as we've established, this was pre-pandemic, but then we had all this fabric come March. So we donated. It was all turned into masks.
Oh my
it turned
God, that's
out.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another serendipity of it.
Well, yeah. I feel like that's something that's important to you guys. It seems like putting good back into the world at this point is something that you make a priority. Obviously all of the proceeds here are going to, what is it going to? Tell me.
Sunrise Movement.
To put the Green New Deal through, what are we doing?
That's right.
What's the Sunrise Movement going to do?
Yeah.
What are people supporting?
You want to take a crack at this one?
Sure, yeah. I mean, they're a youth-led environmental justice and climate justice organization, right? So they were the ones who, like, were sitting in the office of Dianne Feinstein and Nancy mm-hmm. Pelosi, right?
Pelosi, yeah.
Like that was kind of how they came up a couple of years ago. But they're basically just like an incredibly hardworking organization that just kind of, I think a cool thing about Sunrise is that they operate both in the electoral sphere and in the like streets. You know, they're big on showing up at protests and that stuff. But they also have like a really huge army of young folks and supporters who, when they kind of endorse a candidate, they endorse lots of candidates who they're Green New Deal champions who support the Green New Deal. And then they just show up and phone bank for you, or in non-pandemic times, you know, go door to door. And they really, like they helped Ed Markey a lot get reelected as senator in Massachusetts. So yeah, they're cool. I mean, I don't, you know, I've done some phone banking for them. I'm not speaking as someone who's like affiliated with them. I don't totally know the spiel, but I think from our involvement with them, that's kind of their deal, and they're really great.
Do you guys feel that is part of the gig, that supporting like sort of meaningful organizations or things that are going to bring about social justice and change are what you are like something you not just something you want to do, but something you actually must do in your positions?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd say it's both, but you have a microphone. I think that you should be talking into it.
Right.
And but more than that, it's really sort of a matter of urgency. So it's all hands on deck, and it's time to make a big push. And
specifically with climate change.
Well, yeah. Specifically with climate change.
I think specifically with lots of things.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, I mean, I think we'd like to see universal health care. We'd like to see UBI, universal basic income, would be good. I support reparations. I support. I mean, personally, I think nationalizing energy would be kind of an interesting way to go. But you know, I'm not a politician. I'm just an introvert who reads a lot.
Right, but like so, at like the core of everything, I'm an extrovert who doesn't fucking have time to read. Evan, but like at the core of art, right, is the idea at least that you help the progression of society.
Absolutely, right? And maybe that's more to the point. Yeah, I sort of see what we're doing as, or maybe art in general is it's kind of empathy practice. Like if you're reading a book, then you're from somebody else's perspective invariably, then you get to be in their shoes. You get to think like they think, and their patterns of thought are opening up in your mind as you're reading it. And so when people are listening to Pine Grove, I hope that's you know, some of the synapses that are firing for them too. If Pine Grove has made you more reflective or more sensitive to the world, then that's a victory for us. And I think, you know, we want to encourage our listeners to think about what the next step is after that. And I think the furthest step is public policy that protects vulnerable people.
Yeah, I agree with all of that.